Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Once again, it's been another interesting, exciting week. Some good news, a lot of bad news, wars all over the place. Our various local police departments getting militarized further and demilitarized further. The Ukraine not going to be able to pay us back all the money we loaned them in less than a year. I'm going to talk about slavery in Africa tonight, too. Not the slavery that sent blacks to the United States, but the slavery that brought white slaves to Africa. And maybe if we have time, we'll get into self-driving trucks. Okay, let's start with militarization. Yesterday, President Obama made a speech, and he said that he was going to demilitarize, to an extent, local police departments. He felt that too much heavy equipment, the tanks, the big guns, and what have you, had been given to the local police departments. This type of heavy military machinery did not help when there was a demonstration or a protest. It caused people to be concerned and perhaps retaliate. He wanted to take the fear out of the process, so he's going to call back. He's not going to give. The government will no longer give certain heavy military equipment. Now, my problem, very simply, is this. What about the equipment they already have? They've been getting the stuff for several years. They got tons of tanks and everything else. When are we going to get them back? How are we going to get them back? Because as long as the police departments have them, they are going to use them. You just can't say no more. You got to get them back. Now, the federal government has either loaned or rented, leased is the term, this heavy military stuff to the local police departments. So they've got to call back the lease, or they got to go back the machinery they sent there. I have a feeling nothing's going to happen about the stuff that's already there. So this is not even a half-hearted attempt at solving a problem. Now, yesterday, the same day as the president was saying, hey, no more heavy military equipment for local police departments, the National Security Agency transferred, you're not going to believe this, a spy gadget catalog to local police departments, telling them, order whatever you like, it's on us. You heard me, the National Security Agency. They have a catalog with all different kinds of spy gadgets. They can pick your voice out in a group a mile away and pick you up all alone in that crowd of 1,000 people. This is in addition to the surveillance that the federal government is doing. Everything's bugged. Our computers are bugged. Our telephones are bugged. But this is going to be in addition, and it's going to be by the local police department. Sophisticated eavesdropping equipment, so to speak. I don't understand how on one day, the same day, the president says no more heavy military stuff, but yet the government he represents, our government, says, but we're going to let you use spy gadgets. Maybe it's because they're small and not big. Which brings me to another issue here. Why do we have all this extra military equipment? Over the years, I know we were in a lot of wars, but you use this equipment. It gets blown up, okay? And if it isn't blown up, you bring it back and you do something with it. We should have left it like we did after World War II, some of this equipment in big fields just to rot away. But we overproduce. We overproduce military equipment. There is a military-industrial complex, the one that Eisenhower warned us about. And the military-industrial complex, they run the show when it comes to the budget of our country for the purchase of military equipment. They gob up every general and every admiral when they retire and put them on the payroll for their companies, okay? So they've got relationships with other active admirals and generals. Congress, we know, is owned by the military-industrial complex. They'll do anything, provide any type of equipment that the service says they need. And many times, and I can't provide you with examples tonight. I talked about this a year ago, though, provided examples. They make stuff they don't need. They overproduce, knowing they are overproducing. And why doesn't somebody pay attention to this? we could save a lot of money. They're talking about cutting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and all that stuff. Look at where we are pissing away, and it's the only way I can say it, money on military equipment that we don't need. You know who was a big guy in protecting us against this sort of thing in World War II? Harry Truman. When he was a United States Senator at the beginning of World War II, they put him in charge of a committee to oversee the cost of military equipment. He knocked the hell out of the companies. They produced, they did big time, they made a ton of money, but he made sure that the government got good value for their dollar and did not order too much. We need another Harry Truman in that job. Which brings me to another issue, still staying with the militarization of local police departments. In Richmond, South Carolina, Berkeley County Sheriff's Department, this past week, from May 8th through May 15th, the U.S. Army Special Forces entered into law enforcement exercises with the Sheriff's Department. Special Forces, the big sharp guys of the United States Army Sheriff's Department, working together so they would know exactly what to do if there was a riot or a protest or a demonstration in the streets. You say, well, they got to do it, they got to do it. But it's against the law. No one pays attention to the law anymore. The law is called posse. You know, you send the posse out to catch the bad guys in the old West. Posse comitatus. Posse comitatus. And it says basically what it is a federal law that limits the power of the federal government in using United States military as domestic law enforcement personnel, as domestic law enforcement personnel. And this is exactly what they're doing in Richmond, South Carolina. They did it last year, too, in Richmond, South Carolina. This is the second year in a row they're doing the same thing, and it's against the law. The law was passed in 1878. It's been amended many times, as recently as 2011 by Obama for something, not what we're talking about. There are many exceptions, but one thing is clear. You don't take the Army and put them together with local police enforcement to go out and police the people. Very simple. That's all. And they're doing it, and it's wrong. Absolutely wrong. There has been a long, don't forget this. There's been a long-standing tradition, American tradition, of separation between domestic policing and military activity. I've never heard of this happening before. And again, it is wrong. What it is, in effect, is the federal government and the local sheriff's department treating the American people in their area as the enemy, or at least they're getting ready to treat them as the enemy. Okay, we're going to stay with the military again, but I'm going to talk about recruitment right now. Recruitment. Turns out, all the wars we've been in, I thought we had enough personnel to fight this war, these wars, because we have a volunteer military. Well, now it's coming out we don't have enough personnel. We don't have enough young men signing up for the service. They're not joining the Army, Navy, or Marines in the numbers they once did. Can't blame them. I mean, what the hell? They do anywhere from 2 to 4 tours of duties over a period of 3 or 4 years in 4 different places. They're probably going to come back without a leg or an arm. You know, so much for American democracy, so much for protecting my country, but don't send me to a place in the Middle East where we fight these wars. We never win. Nobody wins. It's like a staying action all the time. It's a waste of every American life and every taxpayer dollar. That's what Lewis thinks. Well, now they got to recruit. So how are they doing it? And this is based on a recent study. The military is using the social media. They're using Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And they run these cute little ads and so forth that suggest, and these ads are made for 13, 14, 15-year-olds. They're not made for 18-plus-year-olds. They're made for the young kids who are not eligible yet to join. But it's to encourage them, to make them think positively that a day is going to come when they could join, and they should join. That is the life for them. Another thing they're doing, these video war games. Oh, my grandchildren play the video war games. Your kids or grandchildren got to play the video war games. I've never played one. I wouldn't even know how, but that's a material. These kids are playing the video war games. Well, the government's involved in these video war games, not directly, but through the manufacturers. And again, one of the purposes of the video war games is to get the kids excited about going into battle. And that makes sense because they go into battle every day when they play the video war games to get them excited. So when the time comes, they can join the military. Hopefully they will, and they will not be afraid to do battle. Now, this brings me to another issue. We need new soldiers, no question. We need additional military, no question. Okay. Why then? A bill was before the House of Representatives recently. And what it said in effect was, if you are an illegal brought by your parents to the United States when you were young, if you are an illegal brought to the United States when you were young, you join the Army, and when you get out, you are a citizen of the United States. Fair. What did they do? The Republicans took it out of the bill. They took it out of the bill. They don't want to give citizenship to anybody. And I'll tell you why it upsets me, and you can tell from the tone of my voice it upsets me. During World War II, thousands of non-citizens became service members. They joined the military. They were in Germany. They were in Europe. They were on Iwo Jima, Guadalcanal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right? Any non-citizen who fought in World War II and was honorably discharged became a citizen of the United States. Any non-citizen who was honorably discharged became a member from the military service, became a citizen of the United States. If it was good enough in World War II, why isn't it good enough now? All right, this brings me to the Ukraine. I'm still staying with the military right now. We know the story of the Ukraine. Putin and Russia walked in and took over Crimea. They're probably going to keep Crimea for 100 or 200 years. The rest of the Ukraine is upset. They've had an election recently. They feel that they are a democracy. They don't like Putin being there. They're fighting the people in Crimea who want the Russians to run them and Russian troops also. That's what's going on over there. The problem is to fight a war, you have to have money. Now, the Ukraine is broke, has been broke. Well, they have a bill pending in their parliament. Okay, they have a bill pending in their parliament that, and it's sure to become law in the next week or two, allows a moratorium on foreign debt payments. In other words, if you're a foreign country that is owed money by the Ukraine, they can say, we're not going to pay you. And this will be okay. Because the law says it's okay in the Ukraine. There has to be a basis for it, and there is. It has to be that the money came from a, quote, dishonest lender, unquote. Dishonest lender, okay? Now, I don't know what's going to constitute a dishonest lender. What bothers me in this whole thing is we recently loaned the Ukraine a lot of money. Ever since Putin went into Crimea, we've given them millions, if not billions of dollars. Oh, all the money we've given them to help them. And they don't have to pay us back under this moratorium if they decide we are a dishonest lender. I'm not saying they are going to. They probably won't, but they ain't going to pay us back right away. They ain't got any money. It's going to take years before we see any money coming back. On the same day that the information came out that the parliament was in the process of passing a law regarding a moratorium on foreign debt payments, the Defense Department of the United States, our Defense Department, same day unveiled a plan to increase military spending in the Ukraine. The same day they're saying we're not going to pay it back if we don't want to, our Defense Department announces we're going to increase military spending over there by 17 billion hryvnia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. The euro is a form of money. A dollar is a form of money. In the Ukraine, it's spelled HRYVNIA. Okay, so we're gonna help them with their defense by giving them all this money, okay, that they can spend to buy military equipment. I don't know why they do this. I don't know why we do this. How can a government, listen to me, survive? A government who isn't paying its bills. You have to look at Greece. You have to look at Italy, Spain, Portugal, Cyprus. They're not able to pay their bills. Pretty soon there's going to be a crisis at Greece. It's on big time. How can you run a government? How can you run a bank? Forget a government, wherever this money comes from. It's a bad situation. Just sharing with you what's going on, though. I think in our country, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. Okay, that brings us to Africa. This is most interesting. Let's see. We know that slavery has been an issue in this country going all the way back to the Constitutional Convention. You must realize that most of the people drafting the United States Constitution were slave owners. Slaves were wealth. They were money. The more slaves you had, the richer you were. George Washington had slaves. Thomas Jefferson had slaves. The Constitution at that time that they wrote and passed did not outlaw slavery. But it did say that in 20 years you can't buy any more slaves. In 20 years you cannot buy any more slaves because the people who wrote the Constitution, they said, but we got money. By that time we'll have a lot more slaves and we'll be really wealthy and we don't care what happens to anybody else. All right. Nevertheless, I don't know. We had to fight a war. We had to fight a civil war, 1860 to 1865. Hundreds of thousands of Americans killed. And one of the great purposes of the Civil War was to free the slaves. And we were told we freed the slaves. Well, I don't know. Because today, if you look at these black police demonstrations, and there's tons of them all over the country, slavery is still an issue, and the black man is the descendant of the slave. And for some reason, especially in the South and Southwest, our white Americans do not their colored brethren fairly. Which brings me now to white slaves. Do you know there was a time, this is a reverse of what happened in the United States, there was a time where Africans enslaved white Europeans. Africans enslaved white Europeans. Of course, they were African Muslims. Goes without saying, they were African Muslims. And what they did was, this happened between the 16th and the 18th century on the Barbary Coast, the northern coast of Africa. And involved were the Barbary Coast Pirates. You heard of them, the Barbary Coast Pirates. Well, they would go across to Italy, especially Sicily and the foot of Italy. They'd go to Greece, and they'd raid the little communities along the seashore, along the Mediterranean, and take the white people, men, women, and children, in boats, keep them like the slaves that were brought over from Africa to the United States, and bring them back to Africa. They also would attack boats in the Mediterranean. The Mediterranean, people used to go, just because it's 100 years ago or 300 years ago, 400 years ago, people went on vacations, joy excursions, and they would attack these boats and take the white people off, the white Europeans, and bring them over and make them into slaves. All right? Now, you never knew this. I didn't know this. Involved, so you appreciate the magnitude of what I am talking about, is 1.25 to 1.5 million white Europeans were involved. 1.5 million white Europeans. For the love of me, and I research good, I don't know what happened to these white Europeans after 1800 when they were no longer considered slaves. What happened to their descendants who were white? Okay? I can't find anything. I never learned anything about this whites be enslaved for around 300 years in the large numbers I just told you about. I didn't learn it in grammar school, high school, or college. And most of you didn't hear about it either. It wasn't taught. Why wasn't it taught? Well, you know, we know the problem we had here. There was a reverse situation comparable to what occurred in the United States. But the sorrowful thing is, I don't know what happened to the descendants of those slaves. And I can't find it. I spent a few hours looking. If someone finds it, please write to me. Which brings me to the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service. They are the people we pay our taxes to, all right? They are the processing arm for collecting taxes of the United States government. They've got well over 80,000 employees. Well, we have to pay our taxes, okay? And if we don't pay our taxes, they do things to us. Well, there are 1,600 IRS employees that over a 10-year span have not paid taxes. 1,600 employees of the IRS over a 10-year period have not paid their taxes. Now, why are they in arrears? Well, some improperly claimed dependents. Can you imagine IRS people lying about how many dependents they have? And their repeated failure to file timely tax returns. You and I don't do it. We get penalized up the ass. And finally, this is the worst. I can't believe they did this. Claiming a tax credit for first-time home buyers when no home was bought. They claimed a tax credit on their return for as being a first-time home buyer when they never bought a new home. They never bought a home. Now, these are willful violators. There ain't no question about it. And the government, in 1998, our government passed a law mandating the termination of anyone who doesn't pay the taxes that is an IRS employee. Yet these 1,600 people are still there, okay? And so the law isn't being applied, I guess. At the time when they passed this law in 98, there were more people than 1,600, obviously, who hadn't been paying their taxes. 25% were fired because they didn't pay them. The other 75% is represented by the number 1,600. And the sad thing is these 1,600, some who have not paid taxes for 10 years, while you and I do, are still receiving promotions, raises, and bonuses. Now, let me get back to the IRS as tax collectors. You haven't lived till you've had an IRS agent on your ass because you failed to file a return or your return was not proper, et cetera, et cetera. They know how to put the fear of God in you, and you have to dance to their tune. You have no idea to the second. When they collect, you know, they'll put a lien on your house. They'll put a lien on your bank account. They'll take the 10% of your weekly pay or monthly pay, whatever your pay period is. They're entitled to take 10% out collectively. And they also use SWAT teams now because we gave local police enforcement all these guns. Somehow the local police enforcement gets involved. Sometimes it's just federal people. But they use SWAT teams. They come to somebody's house with a SWAT team. Who the hell are they going to kill? These are families living in these houses because they didn't pay their taxes. This is the abuse that Obama was talking about with military equipment. So that's the story. And I think it's a disgrace. They ought to fire the whole 1,600 of them. Because if you and I have to, then they should. Very simple. Which now brings me to self-driving trucks. We have all heard that very shortly, there are going to be automobiles, cars, that will self-drive. We're not going to have to steer anymore. We're not going to have to step on the gas, step on the brake. We're not going to have to worry about lights or anything else. We're coming out with these super-duper cars. They're going to do everything. We just sit back, read a book, do whatever you want, chit-chat, because the car will drive itself. Well, there are going to be self-driving trucks also. Makes sense. One follows the other. And it's been determined that this is 2015, between 2020 and 2030, 5 to 10 years from now, there will no longer be any truck drivers. Every truck on the highway will be a self-driven truck. Well, this is interesting, and you know why? We have tons of fellas who make a living driving trucks and their cargo cross-country, long-distance drivers, big time. We're going to wipe out their employment. I hope somebody's thinking about this, not that we shouldn't proceed, but what are we going to do to take care of these people, all right? And the reason the companies are going to do it, my God, they won't have to pay salaries anymore. They won't have to pay health benefits. Interestingly, long-distance truck drivers today make very good money. The reason being, most people don't want to do that anymore. It knocks the hell out of your body. It knocks the hell out of your kidneys. It ruins your family life. So these are high-paid employees. They want to get rid of it all. Self-driving trucks are going to be interesting. They're probably going to be good, ultimately, for the economy. What do we do with the hundreds of thousands of truck drivers, maybe millions, who are going to be out of a job? I spoke to you about last week. I spent 25 minutes on electronic banking. The banks don't want cash anymore. They don't want paper money. They don't want coins. They want everyone to use a debit card. It is called electronic banking. So when you buy a loaf of bread, you use your debit card. If you buy a car, you use your debit card. You just use the debit card for everything. If you got money in the bank, it's paid. And the reason they want to do this, and the banks are big on this now, is because they want to control cash. They're afraid that if a crisis comes, and the handwriting is on the wall, there may be a crisis next year. If Greece goes under, the Euro Union goes under, it's going to be a worldwide crisis. If a crisis comes and there is a cash crunch, people will make runs on the banks. They'll go take their money out if it's cash, all right? Well, if they anticipate the run on the bank, the bankers, all they have to do is press a button or two, and nobody's going to be able to get any cash out of the bank. Isn't that terrible? Absolutely terrible. And the central banks will be able to use that money because, as I explained last week, once you deposit in a savings or checking account, title to the money passes to the bank. Thank you, Congress and the President, whoever signed that law. So, and Germany, Germany is looking seriously into doing this because, as I told you, they're heading for a financial crisis if Greece does not pay. Okay, well, I would say that's the show for this week. I think it's been an interesting show. My next topic had to do with spiders. Australia's had spiders falling from the sky by the millions. It's an interesting story, but I don't have time to share it with you. I will share it next week. I thank you for joining me again this week. I enjoy speaking with you. I'm glad you listen. I'm glad you write and say, I agreed with you here, I disagreed with you there, or keep up the good work, or you're stupid, you're a liberal. I get it all. It doesn't bother me as long as you are listening. I enjoy the people I meet on the street here in Key West who say, Lewis, I enjoy listening to your Block Talk radio show. So I say thank you, and I look forward to being with you again next